He was born in the 1930s, and he's still alive. He's 82 years old this year. And I came across him sometime in the 1970s after he wrote Jonathan Livingston Seagull, which he published in 1970. Yeah, Richard Bach, B-A-C-H. Illusions, the Adventures of a Reluctant Messiah. That's what I'm going to read to you. I don't know how far I'm going to get in reading this. I may decide one piece is enough, or I may decide to carry on reading it. The book I have in my hand is 130 pages long or so, longer than I remember it being. Years ago when I read this, I thought it was delightful. But I've forgotten what's in it now. But Richard Bach, I remember reading another book by him, which was about flying an aeroplane. It was A Journey Across Tomorrow or something like that. And I remember thinking that was such a life-affirming book. And I thought, well, Jonathan Livingston Seagull, that's very well known, comparatively speaking. This one isn't. So who knows? Maybe. Anyway, it'll be a good read. So here you are. Illusions by Richard Bach. Read to you in the evening. It was a question I heard more than once after Jonathan Seagull was published. What are you going to write next, Richard? After Jonathan, what? I answered then that I didn't have to write anything next, not a word, and that all my books together said everything that I had asked them to say. Having starved for a while, the car repossessed and that sort of thing, it was fun not to have to work to midnights. Still, every summer or so, I took my antique biplane out into the green meadow seas of Midwest America, flew passengers for $3 rides and began to feel an old tension again. There was something left to say, and I hadn't said it. I do not enjoy writing at all. If I can turn my back on an idea out there in the dark, if I can avoid opening the door to it, I won't even reach for the pencil. But once in a while, there's a great dynamite burst of flying glass and brick and splinters through the front wall, and somebody stalks over the rubble, seizes me by the throat and gently says, "I will not let you go until you set me in words on paper." That's how I met Illusions. There in the Midwest, even, I'd lie on my back practicing cloud vaporizing, and I couldn't get the story out of my mind. What if somebody came along who was really good at this, who could teach me how my world works and how to control it? What if I could meet a super advanced? What if a Siddhartha or a Jesus came into our time with power over the illusions of the world because he knew the reality behind them? And what if I could meet him in person? If he were flying a biplane and landed in the same meadow with me, what would he say? What would he be like? Maybe he wouldn't be like the Messiah on the oil street, glass-stained pages of my journal. Maybe he wouldn't say anything this book says. But then again, the things this one told me, that we magnetize into our lives whatever we hold in our thought, for instance. If that is true, then somehow I have brought myself to this moment for a reason, and so have you. Perhaps it is no coincidence that you're holding this book. Perhaps there's something about these adventures that you came here to remember. I choose to think so. And I choose to think my Messiah is perched out there on some other dimension, not fiction at all, watching us both and laughing for the fun of it happening, just the way we've planned it to be. And that is the introduction. He has something new to say. Well, better read on then. There was a master come unto the earth, born in the holy land of Indiana, raised in the mystical hills east of Fort Wayne. The master learned of this world in the public schools of Indiana. And as he grew in his trade as a mechanic of automobiles. But the master had learnings from other lands and other schools, from other lives that he had lived. He remembered these, and remembering became wise and strong, so that others saw his strength and came to him for counsel. The master believed that he had power to help himself and all mankind, and as he believed, so it was for him, so that others saw his power and came to him to be healed of their troubles and their many diseases. The master believed that it is well for any man to think upon himself as a son of God. And as he believed, so it was, and the shops and garages where he worked became crowded and jammed with those who sought his learning and his touch, and the streets outside with those who longed only that the shadow of his passing might fall upon them and change their lives. It came to pass, because of the crowds, that the several foremen and shop managers bid the master leave his tools and go his way, for so tightly was he thronged that neither he nor other mechanics had room to work upon the automobiles. So it was that he went into the countryside, and people following began to call him Messiah and worker of miracles. And as they believed, it was so. If a storm passed as he spoke, not a raindrop touched a listener's head. The last of the multitude heard his words as clearly as the first, no matter lightning nor thunder in the sky about. And always he spoke to them in parables. And he said unto them, within each of us lies the power of our consent to health and to sickness, to riches and to poverty, to freedom and to slavery. It is we who control these and not another. A millman spoke and said, easy words for you, master, for you are guided as we are not, and need not toil as we toil. A man has to work for his living in this world. The master answered and said, "Once there lived a village of creatures along the bottom of a great crystal river." Part 12. The current of the river swept silently over them. The current of the river swept silently over them all, young and old, rich and poor, good and evil, current going its own way, knowing only its own crystal self. Each creature, in its own manner, clung tightly to the twigs and rocks of the river bottom, for clinging was their way of life, and resisting the current each had learned from birth. But one creature said at first, "I'm tired of clinging, though I cannot see it with my eyes. I trust that the current knows where it is going, and I shall let go and let it sink the same. I shall let go and let it take me where it will. Clinging, I shall die of boredom." The other creatures laughed and said, "Fool, let go, and that current you worship will throw you tumbled and smashed across the rocks, and you will die quicker than boredom." But the one heeded them not, and taking a breath for the first time this year. But the one heeded them not, and taking a breath did not let go, and at once was tumbled and smashed by the current across the rocks. I'm going to stop there, because I'm afraid that I might not be able to follow what you're saying. You see, my brain has given up working. So, okay. That is the beginning of Richard Bach, author of Jonathan Livingston Seagull. It's a good book, yeah. Thanks. I'm going to say goodnight. Before goodnight says goodbye, without me having any input. And I want to say that I'm very glad to have started reading this little book.